Dream of a Ridiculous Man, a Fantastic Story by Fyodor Dostoevsky. Chapter 1. I am a ridiculous man. They call me a madman now. That would be a distinct rise in my social position, were it not that they still regard me as being as ridiculous as ever. But that does not make me angry any more. They are all dear to me now, even while they laugh at me. Yes, even then they are, for some reason, particularly dear to me. I shouldn't have minded laughing with them, not at myself, of course, but because I love them. Had I not felt so sad as I looked at them? I feel sad because they do not know the truth, whereas I know it. Oh, how hard it is to be the only man to know the truth. But they won't understand that. No, they will not understand. And yet, in the past, I used to be terribly distressed at appearing to be ridiculous. No, not appearing to be, not being. I've always caught a ridiculous figure. I suppose I must have known it from the day I was born. At any rate, I've known for certain that I was ridiculous ever since I was 7 years old. Afterwards, I went to school, then to the university, and, well, the more I learned, the more conscious did I become of the fact that I was ridiculous. So that, for me, my years of hard work at university seem in the end to have existed for the sole purpose of demonstrating and proving to me, the more deeply engrossed I become in my studies, that I was an utterly absurd person. And as during my studies, so all my life. Every year the same consciousness that I was ridiculous in every way strengthened and intensified in my mind. They always laughed at me, but not one of them knew or suspected that if there were one man on earth who knew better than anyone else that he was ridiculous, that man was I. And this, I mean, the fact that they did not know it, was the bitterest pill for me to swallow. But there I was, myself at fault. I was always so proud that I never wanted to confess it to anyone. No. I wouldn't do that for anything in the world. As the years passed, this pride increased in me, so that I do believe that if ever I had by chance confessed it to anyone, I should have blown my brains out the same evening. Oh, how I suffered in the days of my youth from the thought that I might not myself resist the impulse to confess it to my schoolfellows. But ever since I became a man, I grew for some unknown reason a little more composed in my mind, though I was more and more conscious of that awful characteristic of mine. Yes, most decidedly for some unknown reason, for to this day I have not been able to find out why that was so. Perhaps it was because I was becoming terribly disheartened, owing to one circumstance which was beyond my power to control, namely, the conviction which was dawning upon me that nothing in the whole world made any difference. I had long felt it dawning upon me, but I was fully convinced of it only last year, and that too, all of a sudden, as it were. I suddenly felt that it made no difference to me whether the world existed or whether nothing existed anywhere at all. I began to be acutely conscious that nothing existed in my own lifetime. At first I couldn't help feeling that at any rate in the past many things had existed, but later on I came to the conclusion that there had not been anything even in the past, but that for some reason it had merely seemed to have been. Little by little I became convinced that there would be nothing in the future either. It was then that I suddenly ceased to be angry with people and stopped noticing them. This indeed disclosed itself in the smallest trifles. For instance, I would knock against people while walking in the street. And not because I was lost in thought. I had nothing to think about. I had stopped thinking about anything at that time. It made no difference to me. Not that I had found an answer to all the questions. Oh, I had not settled a single question, and there were thousands of them. But it made no difference to me, and all the questions disappeared. And, well, it was only after that I learnt the truth. I learnt the truth last November, on the 3rd of November to be precise, and every moment since has been imprinted indelibly on my mind. It happened on a dismal evening, as dismal an evening as could be imagined. I was returning home at about 11 o'clock, and I remember thinking all the time that there could not be a more dismal evening. Even the weather was foul. It had been pouring all day, and the rain, too, was the coldest and most dismal rain that ever was. A sort of menacing rain, I remember that. A rain with a distinct animosity towards people. But about 11 o'clock it had stopped suddenly, and a horrible dampness descended upon everything, and it became much damper and colder than when it had been raining. And a sort of steam was rising from everything, from every cobble in the street, and from every side street, if you peered closely into it from the street as far as the eye could reach. I could not help feeling that if the gaslight had been extinguished everywhere, everything would have seemed much more cheerful, and that the gaslight oppressed the heart so much just because it shed a light upon it all. I had had scarcely any dinner that day. I had been spending the whole evening with an engineer who had two more friends visiting him. I never opened my mouth, and I expect I must have got on their nerves. They were discussing some highly controversial subject, and suddenly got very excited over it. But it really did not make any difference to them. I could see that. I knew that their excitement was not genuine, so I suddenly blurted it out. "My dear fellows," I said, "you don't really care a damn about it, do you?" They were not in the least offended, but they all burst out laughing at me. That was because I had said it without meaning to rebuke them, but simply because it made no difference to me. Well, they realized that it made no difference to me, and they felt very happy. When I was thinking about the gaslight in the streets, I looked up at the sky. The sky was awfully dark, but I could clearly distinguish the torn wisps of cloud, and between them, fathomless dark patches. All of a sudden I became aware of a little star in one of those patches, and I began looking at it intently. That was because the little star gave me an idea. I made up my mind to kill myself that night. I had made up my mind to kill myself already 2 months before, and, poor as I am, I bought myself an excellent revolver and loaded it the same day. But 2 months had elapsed, and it was still lying in the drawer. I was so utterly indifferent to everything that I was anxious to wait for the moment when I would not be so indifferent, and then kill myself. Why, I don't know. And so, every night during those 2 months, I thought of shooting myself as I was going home. I was only waiting for the right moment. And now the little star gave me an idea, and I made up my mind then and there that it should most certainly be that night. But why the little star gave me the idea, I don't know. And just as I was looking at the sky, this little girl suddenly grabbed me by the elbow. The street was already deserted, and there was scarcely a soul to be seen. In the distance, a cabman was fast asleep on his box. The girl was about 8 years old. She had a kerchief on her head, and she wore only an old, shabby little dress. She was soaked to the skin, but what struck in my memory was her little torn, wet boots. I still remember them. They caught my eye especially. She suddenly began tugging at my elbow and calling me. She was not crying, but saying something in a loud, jerky sort of voice, something that did not make sense, for she was trembling all over and her teeth were chattering from the cold. She seemed to be terrified of something, and she was crying desperately, "Mummy! Mummy!" They turned round to look at her, but did not utter a word and went on walking. But she ran after me and kept tugging at my clothes, and there was a sound in her voice which was very frightened, in which children signified despair. I know that sound. Though her words sounded as if they were choking her, I realized that her mother must be dying somewhere very near, or that something similar was happening to her, and that she had run out to call someone, to find someone who would help her mother. But I did not go with her. On the contrary, something made me drive her away. At first, I told her to go and find a policeman, but she suddenly clasped her hands and, whimpering and gasping for breath, kept running at my side and would not leave me. It was then that I stamped my foot and shouted at her. She just cried, "Sir! Sir!" And then she suddenly left me and rushed headlong across the road. Another man appeared there, and she evidently rushed from me to him. I climbed to the fifth floor. I live apart from my landlord. We all have separate rooms, as in a hotel. My room is very small and poor. My window is a semicircular skylight. I have a sofa covered with American cloth, a table with books on it, two chairs, and a comfortable armchair. A very old armchair indeed, but low-seated and with a high back serving as a headrest. I sat down in the armchair, lighted the candle, and began thinking. Next door, in the other room beside the partition, the usual bedlam was going on. It had been going on since the day before yesterday. A retired army captain lived there, and he had visitors. 6 merry gentlemen who drank vodka and played faro with an old pack of cards. Last night they had a fight, and I knew that 2 of them were for a long time pulling each other about by the hair. The landlady wanted to complain, but she is dreadfully afraid of the captain. We had only 1 more lodger in our rooms, a thin little lady, the wife of an army officer, on a visit to Petersburg with her 3 little children who had all been taken ill since their arrival at our house. She and her children were simply terrified of the captain, and they lay shivering and crossing themselves all night long, and the youngest child has had a sort of nervous attack from fright. This captain, I know that for a fact, sometimes stops people on Nevsky Avenue and asks them for a few coppers, telling them he is very poor. He can't get a job at the civil service, but the strange thing is, and that's why I'm telling you this, that the captain has never once during the month he has been living with us made me feel in the least irritated. From the very first, of course, I would not have anything to do with him, and he himself was bored with me the very first time we met. But however big a noise they raised behind their partition and however many of them there were in the captain's room, it makes no difference to me. I sit up all night, and I assure you I don't hear them at all, so completely do I forget about them. You see, I stay awake all night till daybreak, and that has been going on for a whole year now. I sit up all night in the armchair at the table, doing nothing. I read books only in the daytime. At night, I sit like that, without even thinking about anything in particular. Some thoughts wander in and out of my mind, and I let them come and go as they please. In the night, the candle burns out completely. I sat down at the table, took the gun out of the drawer, and put it down in front of me. I remember asking myself as I put it down, "Is it going to be then?" And I replied with complete certainty, "It is." That is to say, I was going to shoot myself. I knew I should shoot myself that night for certain. What I did not know was how much longer I should go on sitting at the table till I shot myself. And I should, of course, have shot myself, had it not been for the little girl.